This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and today I'm joined by Superintendent Charles Oskey and Chairman of the Board, Travis Pearson. Hello, Travis. Nice to see you. And Charles, good to see you again.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So, if you were at the last board meeting of the trustees earlier this week, you would have noticed that the public comment period mysteriously appeared at the end of the meeting rather than as one of the first agenda items. I'm curious, Travis, can you tell me why, as chairman of the board and, you know, responsible for conducting that meeting, why the change?
So we've had a couple of attempts here to see if we can streamline and make our meetings more efficient. We're throughout the district, we're looking for efficiencies and places we can help. And one of the points that I'm targeting is the structure of the meeting where public comment comes early is problematic. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One, the board first approves the agenda of what we're going to talk about at that meeting. That's our first step after Pledge of Allegiance and roll call. So then public comment comes in, and statutorily, as board members, we're not allowed to reply. We can't converse with someone there.
Can you just say that again? Because I think it's an important point that you are actually not able to respond. You can ask a question for clarification, but you are not allowed to respond as a board.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that I was shocked to learn when I joined the school board. I had no idea that we couldn't simply converse with public comment makers at a meeting, and it was something new to me. But no, we can't. We're not allowed by statute to have a discussion or a conversation. We can ask a clarifying or for additional detail question, but that's the extent of our ability to interact. So it is the board's time to listen to the public, but we can't engage and talk. And so that's a thing that is difficult, and we're trying to help with that a little bit by moving the public comment to our work session. That's the Wednesday prior to the meeting. That gives us a chance to, it's a less formal, less structured environment, and we are putting together the agenda for the next meeting.
So what you've described is actually moving the public comment period completely out of the board meeting and into the preparatory work session, which happens on the Wednesday before the board meeting.
Well, we're moving one to the end.
Yes.
So the one you're talking about just got moved to the end. So if there's stuff we need to be prepared for next month, Travis, as a board chair, and I can say, hey, that needs to be on the radar. But what we're trying to do is add more opportunity to hear from the public so that they really know it. So we really didn't take one out and move it to another. We kept it. We just put it at the end. And we moved another one, another opportunity. So we're actually providing people an opportunity for public comment at the beginning of the work session so that Travis and the Board of Trustees have information before they set the agenda for Monday. So we're actually adding more public comment to the whole process.
So many people may not be familiar with the fact that there even is a preparatory work session the Wednesday before the board meeting. What actually is the general business of those meetings?
So those are typically a chance for the board to get more in detail on some particular item of discussion. This is where we can call in presenters, look at research, have experts come tell us all of the things that we're using to make decisions for the district going forward. So the work session is typically a topic or two. We focus in tight, and it's a deep dive on upcoming items for the work session. But it's also key in our preparatory stuff, because that's as we set the agenda, we do so at the work session. And that's why we're asking people to come talk to us there, so we can, if this is an item that needs to be discussed in detail at the meeting, we can make it an agenda item, at which point we can have people now talk to us and we can go further with the discussion.
So a work session is different from a regular board meeting because it's not, there is no action taken. It's all discussion. Does that mean that the way that public comment can be received and the interchange of conversation and information, is that different too at a work session? Or again, is it just a member of the public or a stakeholder or any community member who has a point to make just comes and they say that? Can you respond? or is it subject to the same rules as in a board meeting?
So our work session is a special meeting of the board. We called it a work session in Johnson County for as far back as anyone can remember, but it technically, by state laws, is a special meeting of the board, meaning public comment still is restricted to us listening. We can't go into it, but it gives us the opportunity to put something that's needed on the agenda for the Monday meeting, yes. And then we can engage someone with the full conversation. We can go into some detail and get in on that item.
So, Travis, you're relatively new to the board.
Yes.
Couple of years on, but you're now board chair, and so you see things from a very different perspective than just as the parent that you are. Do you think that there is a place for some kind of more conversation between people who have something that they would like to see either happen or to discontinue from happening within the school district? Is there something that, an opportunity for something that's more discursive than a public comment period allows?
You know, I've always encouraged people in the community to come talk to me. When you see me out and about, stop and visit with me. And I know most of the board is real open to conversations like that, but the best way to get the board to notice and discuss things is visit with the members as we're out and about interacting at the football game or the volleyball match, whatever place you can find us. That's a great place to have that discussion. And then when it's on our radar, we can begin setting up that agenda, calling for more information on the topic, and even bring in people to discuss it.
So some people may feel that sort of accosting you in the grocery store is not really the sort of the right place to have a significant issue brought up. Should there be a more sort of purposeful discussion, interchange of ideas mechanism within the school district? Charles, what do you think?
I think you got to be very careful in saying Travis doesn't speak for the whole board. He's just listening as an individual. So if there are things that need to be brought, you can always follow that chain of command saying, hey, we want to talk about this, public comments, free to that. But we also try to encourage the chain of command, because some of the things before it even gets to me, it gets to the board, it says, okay, what have we done to get to that process? But people sometimes don't understand the process is why we come to public comment, or there's something out there to put on the radar. But in those conversations, yeah, I mean, it could be a board member, it could be an administrator of a building, it could be me myself in that. But the reality is we don't know until we know it, right? Unless there's a piece. And how do we allow people to say, hey, this is a concern, what's the reality? I think some of the frustrations you get with public comment is exactly what Travis is talking about. We can't answer back. I mean, they just come in and they say, this is how it is. Now they want us to reply. We're not going to reply.
Perhaps it would be prudent to, at the beginning of every public comment period, to say, very happy to listen to what you have to say in your 5 minutes or whatever you're going
and
to
Travis
allocate them.
Travis and Jen have been doing a good job with that,
yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Jen was far better at this than me. I was thinking on the way here that I'm going to pull out one of the transcripts of the minutes and take what Jen used to always open public comment with, put it in my notes and copy it, basically.
Because I think a lot of people, you know, don't retain that kind of information or don't know it. Going back to the public comment period, which is going to now appear on the regular board meetings on those Mondays in the month, it's going to be at the very end of the meeting. I have a couple of questions about that. Why have two public comment periods when you've got one at the work session potentially on a Wednesday that you could, you know, take opportunity of? But why have one at the very end of a meeting? You've got to sit through. And to be fair, school board meetings can be lengthy. I understand that you are trying to expedite them and make them faster, but the one this week was over an hour and a half already before you got to public comment period. That is a colossal amount of time for somebody to sit on a Monday evening with an issue that they want to bring before you. Why put it then? Why not put it up before the agenda and just have it as the very first thing after the Pledge of Allegiance and the meeting opens?
Sure, it's a great question. So, one, what I found in my couple years on the board here is people come in and they have something very passionate to speak about that's typically on the agenda somewhere later in the day or in the program, and they don't have all the information. They haven't heard even a quarter of what the board has been presented. So by moving it, my idea was let them hear all of the facts, all of the things that we are using to make that decision so that they can speak knowing the additional information that will be presented later in that meeting. So we can't, time and again, someone would come in, have a public comment that we're going to address and discuss in a short time, and all of the questions and all of the concerns would have been addressed, would have been spoken to, and they'd have had a chance to know exactly what we were considering as we hit that portion of the meeting. So by pushing the public comment to the end, the goal was to provide anyone there wanting to make a public comment with as much information as we're able before they have to speak. So we were putting our cart before our horse, in my opinion. We're trying to switch that so they know what we know and we can have a discussion from that point.
Well, I think that leads neatly on to what the role of the board is and how much they can influence whatever issue has come up as public comment. So maybe you just describe, I think there may be not necessarily universal clarity about what the board can and can't do. Where
so can
those
I just
areas.
Add my two bits to the last question?
Please do.
I want to say we're excited about our board meeting and all the principals' reports. I mean, some of the things is we just want people to be exposed to hearing all the great things that are happening. I mean, so just by experiencing, it shouldn't be a negative thing, but by experiencing the presentations, because not only are the board meetings long, if you go through every board report that's in there and you look at the videos and stuff, it could be an hour and a half of information of great things that are happening in our district. So I'm going to, as a superintendent, say sometimes, yeah, we want to cut our board meetings down. But when Travis and I talk about that is there's so much good stuff that we want to be out in the community. We want everybody to hear it, too. And sometimes just being at the end of it, that derails all the great things that we're about ready to present when we're trying to encourage them to come on Wednesday so that we can be prepared to have a good conversation. But board meetings at JCSD number one are not just all business. There's a lot of great information that's getting presented too.
I think that raises a good point that often it's not necessarily public comment, it's public complaint and so on. Maybe you could just explain, Travis, what the board can and cannot do, and Charles also where your role is. You know, everybody, when they've got an issue that they are beginning to feel hot and passionate about, and they'd like to see change, you know, the human instinctive reaction is, let's go to the top, you know, let's go to the top, we'll get this thing sorted out right away. But I think it may be more complicated than that sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. This is something that's a real commonly misunderstood. The board's role is to write policy for the district. So our function is very high, 30,000 foot view, looking down to say, these are the things we consider most critical for the district, and then we write a policy that tells the district how we expect everything to be performed. But it's a real individual, or not real individual, it's real district-wide. It covers the entire thing. So people feel like you come to a board with one concern in one building, and that's not what we're doing. We're writing policy for the entire district, all of our school buildings, at a time. Then we give those policies to the super, who identifies who's going to take an action, what action should be taken. He'll discuss that with building leadership, and that gets pushed down to now we're going to talk to which program are we going to change at, or things of that nature. But the board almost never has a role to say, I would like to see a new sports program launched in KC. That's not our function. We don't identify individual items like that. What we say is, we wish to see athletics so our children have the chance to be strong and go compete. And then the super will go meet with that building's leadership and say, what athletics can we offer? What talents do we have in the building that we can get coaches to come work with? And that's where the program comes from. So it's really widely misunderstood that at the board level, we never decide, you know, I wished we could include a pilot program. That's not us. What we say is we want these opportunities. We're asking the super and the leadership to determine how can we make that a reality. So it's confusing. It's tough from the top end.
So, Charles, can you explain to people who may have a public comment or complaint or something that they would like to see changed, what is the best way for them within the school district to approach that if it's not going directly to the board who can't necessarily do something about that?
No, that's a great question. And it's, again, following the chain of command. If it's something to deal with the building, then I'm going to say, have you met with building leadership yet? Yes, we have. All right, so we just try to push it back, because when they come to us, we're going to go all the way back to the bottom anyway and say, why haven't you met? Why haven't you resolved this? And then people get very frustrated with, well, I didn't get what I wanted here, so then I came to you. Well, when you come all the way to the top, I'm going to go all the way back down to the bottom and say, okay, what's the story? What's the information? Well, if you haven't met with the principal, this is not at my level yet. You need to go back, and then that adds more frustration to the process. So I think we really need to encourage here that there is a chain of command for a reason. Because when it does get to us, even if it went right over the top of me to Travis as a chairman of the board and to the board, they're going to direct me. Well, guess what? If Charles doesn't know about it, he's going to go all the way back down to the bottom. And then in some cases, we'll have to start all the process over again. So the more we can be consistent with what we met and how we've done things, and you went up the chain of command, that also gives us some time to say, hey, Charles, we're not doing this. So maybe I can address it with the leadership underneath me before it gets to the Board of Trustees, because Travis just said their job is to develop policy that I have to enforce. Even though we want to make sure the public has the ability to communicate and say, hey, here are our concerns, we want to be as transparent as we can. But the more we can follow what I've witnessed in leadership and administration is when you go to the top and you go all the way back down to the bottom and start the process over, you usually don't cool the situation off. You usually make the situation worse. So if we can follow those chains up through that, I know it takes a little bit more time, but with hope, the problem gets solved before it has to come to the board or to me as a superintendent, because we just kind of followed up through the chain of command.
And as superintendent, do you have the authority to override building leadership's decisions?
I do have that authority based on data, okay, not on opinion, based on facts and having those conversations. But even overriding that authority of a building principal has to be based on policy too. So, you know, if there's something that has to be made or a decision has to come to my plate, I make the decision and they have to implement it going down. Absolutely. But I would hope that we're not overriding decisions all the time. Most of my decisions are going to be based on policies and directions from the board too.
A lot of board meetings do discuss policy frequently. Do you feel that you have a up-to-date, valid, comprehensive set of policies that cover the eventualities that may arise on any given day, on any different subject, or is there still a great deal of work to do?
Oh my gosh, that's a hard question.
I'm glad you asked that one, though. We have just been going through a policy audit. We've got the Wyoming School Board Association going through all of the policies at Johnson County School District 1 and checking to see if we're current, if they've been updated recently, if they're out of date, if changes in court rulings and new laws have been met or need to be added. So we've been going through at each meeting entire sections of our policy that's been audited by the experts at the WSBA and adding those that we need, getting rid of ones that they feel shouldn't be there. So it's a never-ending, ongoing quest to chase proper policy for the entire district. But we brought in some experts to help us speed this up. I'm going to hit Charles on this one because you solved it for us once. If the board should sit down and review every policy in our manual, can you remind me how long would that take?
If we did the consistency of only doing three policies every meeting, it was going to take 14 years to go through our entire
policy.
So what we've asked, and a lot is, we're not the only district. Several districts have asked. So there's a policy audit, so they're doing it by sections. This is traditional, even in Johnson County. There's a lot of policies that were just developed basically on the needs of the district and not necessarily updated to federal and state laws. So we're taking that, what do you want to say, 30,000-foot view. We're finding out actually what we should have, and make sure they're in place first, because those are the ones that you just commented about. That do we have all the policies in place for the operations of the district? And then we have a section what's called optional. We've chosen to take the optional ones. They say, hey, this is an optional policy you might want to do. That will go through policy committee and then back to the Board of Trustees. I don't want to misspeak, but I think our intent is to make sure all our policies are reviewed and we have the ones that are non-negotiable approved. So that's the system operations. And then we'll come back and hit the ones that are optional, go through policy committee and come up to the Board of Trustees and kind of continue what I think is a great committee. Our policy committee is pretty strong.
I want to jump on that one too. Since I joined the board, I was on policy committee. It's my favorite part of the job. We have some real experts that come in.
So what kind of things are you discussing and changing?
We open every policy in our entire manual, and we've got to schedule which ones we look at, but we go through them and see, was what was written, was what we say we're going to do in this district still applicable? Does it need updated? Are there changes to language, or have we learned new laws have been passed to change what we've said? So it's, to me, very fascinating. I love to go through with these real master teachers that have been at it 30 years.
And you're consulting with the people who are subject to those policies.
Absolutely. Those are.
I think that's the greatest thing about it. I mean, the School Boards Association one that we're doing now, it's law. I mean, we come and bring those policies. It's like, well, we can't change it because that's what the lawyer said, right? This is what we need to do. This is what the statute is. These others that we have flexibility with option is we're hearing from the people that it will kind of guide, right? Is that a fair statement of saying? And we've come across a lot of them as we're not doing this. Okay. However, we've been doing it this way for, I'm just going to use a broad example.
We've
been doing this for 15 years, and that's not what the policy reads. We had that discussion at this last meeting. It's like, oh my, we haven't been following policy with this certain little section. Because we were kind of doing what we thought. We weren't following policy. So it really brought some good discussion. We went on tradition. We came back to the plate. And it's good to have the teachers and everybody else there going, why are we doing that? Well, that's because that's what you guys wanted. Okay, well, if it's not policy, then they can go back to their buildings as representation. When somebody says, well, why did we change? It's because we have to follow policy. So it's an educational piece, but man, there's some great points of view that come out in this committee.
Could you give me some examples? I mean, just paint a picture of it, a bit more detailed.
Just go ahead and use it. I guess we'll use it. Yeah, so when people resign or leave the district, we've been paying their insurance through August. Policy says as soon as you're resign or done, your insurance ends. So, well, we've been doing it this way for a long time, but that's not what policy reads. We also went through a lot of things in this policy about insurance and health that, first of all, never should have or have gone away with how businesses run, but it brought the question, so why did we do that? Or why did we do workman's comp? Why do we not do it this way? Why did we do it that way? So then you bring Connie in, who has expertise in all of those areas, and
explains, the business manager
brings that to the question of why we don't do it that way or why we can't do it that way. And then you bring like Travis in, who brings the industry in and said, well, industry, this is the way industry does it and everybody else. So we're always comparing. And then you'll have a high school teacher says, well, what does it mean for the retirees? So we're trying to recruit and benefit. So in this paying out, so maybe if you have been in the district for 15 or 20 plus years, we will pay your insurance for the next 3 months until you move on, because we want to say thank you for your 15 to 20 years, which then becomes a benefit or a recruiting tool. But everything else under that, we're following policy, which is standard protocol for industry. Travis references industry a lot. And when Travis brings that to the table, all of us go, yeah. Okay. And then I bring to the table, yeah, this is what other districts have always done. So it helps everybody understand why we're changing policy. But I think for me, the biggest thing is people ask the question why, and then we come up with some answers, and it's what's best for the district. And I think there's always a lot more buy-in when you develop a policy that a committee has had an opportunity to put their eyes on. And that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and then to follow that up, when we have these really good discussions on, for example, the retirement and how long do we hold insurance, that's a chance for people in the buildings to hear it at the policy committee and go back and say, did you know that we've been paying for 3 additional months of insurance, that in private practice, the last month you work is the end of it. If you wish to continue insurance, you have to use the COBRA laws and pay for it yourself. But that's something that not everybody in every building knows, and that's, we're pushing it back that direction too. So those discussions help a lot.
And then for me, it's also a great piece that then when it does come in front of the board has had members on this committee so they can answer the question why they're making the recommendation. So then most of the time boards will say, so what's the input from the stakeholders? Well, we can say that the stakeholders had an opportunity through the committee to present, and that's what we're presenting to the board. So make it very clear. The policy committee does not make policy. It just makes recommendations to the board, and the board will approve it.
So are you going to see financial efficiencies from this whole policy review? Do you think you're going to see savings?
Well, our district-wide initiative that we have directed as a board is to find every single chance like this where we can find savings, find efficiencies, every place we can hunt down one of these things that will change our cash flow is something that we are questing right now. We're fine-tooth combing the entire district. And Charles, you can flesh that out better.
So I'm going to say the answer to it is yes, because when your policies are updated and where they need to be, you make decisions based on policy, so that's where the efficiencies come in. When you have policies that are outdated and you're really not following them, that's where the inefficiencies, so that example we just used with insurance, if I remember right, Connie said $60,000 to $70,000 efficiency.
Yes.
So reviewing of these policies and updating, that's just a great example of we're finding financial efficiencies on what we've been doing.
And I don't suppose it costs any extra to do the policy review, does it?
Well, it means we've got teachers and administrators and board members all volunteering and donating additional time. So from the point of view, it does take some extra effort. It does mean a lot of people have to drive from KC and meet with us and have that discussion. But it's we're not spending any additional money to do this. We're doing this to make sure that we've got the right policies in place.
So going back, yes. we diverted for a moment, but going back to the public comment periods. Just to kind of be sure that people understand, the work session is the Wednesday prior to the Monday board meeting. What time does it take place and where?
5:15 when it's up here, 5:45 when it's in KC.
And how often is it here? What's
all
a quarter in KC?
All but three times.
We moved three of the work sessions to KC this year, and that was a change as well.
Three work sessions, two board meetings.
Okay, yep. And then board meetings are mostly in Buffalo, but also
6 o'clock in KC.
6 o'clock in KC. And how should somebody who wants to make a public comment at either of those opportunities, how should they get on the agenda? Are there things that you will not consider? What needs to happen so that that public comment can be made?
Well, they can. First of all, I would always encourage people that have any questions about public comment to call up here to the district office and speak to Heidi. She'll kind of give you what time you need to be there. And then you can just show up a few minutes early and you fill out a form that says why you're doing it. And then that form gets presented to Travis, and that's how he selects through that process. But the part of the reason of the form is you can't be talking about employees, any of individual employees. I mean, there are some protocols in there that are really critical. I would just strongly encourage anybody that wants to make public comment to, first of all, just reach out to Heidi here at the district office. She can explain those rules. But if you want to make public comment and haven't called Heidi, you probably need to show up maybe 10, 15 minutes early, fill out I call it an application, but it's a form. It kind of outlines what the protocols are, and then those are given to Travis as the board chair. And then I think he just randomly picks through them and lets them select and go from there.
So, Travis, how does that process work? What happens? You get handed a bunch of papers. You've got expectant people sitting, waiting, expecting to be able to say their piece. What happens?
So I maybe run this a little more informally than most boards do, but I typically will take them in the order I'm handed. So who's ever on the top is the first person I'll call.
And you take all of them?
Yes, I do. Okay. Every one of them that has ever been presented to this point we've taken. So I grab them, the first one, whoever handed it in first, is my first call out. But in those, we've had occasion where several people have said, I wouldn't to go first. I don't wish to be the first presenter. I would like to hear what everybody else has to say and go at the end. So I'm happy to take that sheet of paper, put it to the back, and call out the next person. So it's not real formalized the way I've been running it.
So is there, do you put a time limit on how long you would?
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yes, no, he's right. We do. We've got a five-minute time limit.
Five-minute time limit.
Yep.
Okay. And
so can I just add to Travis is doing it the right way. I want to support him. There is no formal process. So it's not a 1, 2, 3, 4, a draw out of a hat. I mean, most of the times they're just brought to the table. A board chair might have the privilege of organizing it according to there might be some themes. So you're not going back and forth if there's a theme. But I've never seen four themes, different themes at a meeting. It's usually just
One or two.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to support what Jan and Travis have done. They've done a good job with that. So the reality is there is no real well, I was here first, so I should go first type of thing. It's really just about coming in, filling it out, and then we just try to like, hear everybody's voice.
As a board member, when you hear a public comment, and but you know that you can't respond, how do you think individual board members actually then take those public comments, and what do they do with them?
I guess the most common response would be, if it's something that has been brought up that we feel we need to learn more on or do more discussion on, we will ask the superintendent to get us the information on that topic, and then we can bring it to a next meeting or a future meeting on the agenda, depending on how much time and effort it takes to research that topic. So typically the response or action would be at some point during from the board toward the end of the meeting, we would say, we wish to learn more on the particular topic. Would you please, Mr. Super, find everything you can to help us with that? So that's our normal course of action.
So just before we wrap up.
So could I just speak to that?
Yes.
The hardest thing about public comment is not making comment.
Yes.
I mean, I got to so be honest. From our point of view, sometimes these things can be just addressed with a 3-minute, let me explain what you don't know type of thing. And some of that's, but I mean, the board is following protocol, it's following laws and what that, but I think the community needs to know when there's a concern, it's being heard. What we've talked about here is they don't get a response from us because it's just like, we've been told this, come back, you're just looking at me, give me a response, I want to know. Well, we can't really give you a response. So that's hence is why we're trying to move things to a Wednesday. So if there is a response, we can put it on the agenda for Monday. So we can create a little bit better relationship with people that maybe do have a valid concern that they need to address as a board. Or more importantly, like Travis said, hey, Super, you probably need to reach out and call that parent and see what's really happening, or go back and find out what's happening in the district. So, again, it's that the hardest thing for me is just saying, oh, I got the answer, but I'm not going to be able to say it right here.
Can't blurt it out.
Okay. Yeah. As people consider, they've got an issue that's burning hot for them. What would you like them to consider, Travis, as to how they decide whether they should come before the school board or not to make that comment?
Well, I'm going to fall back a little bit on one of the first things we do when you're elected to school board is get you to the WSBA training. And they're really good in this training about teaching us the first step and the first question is, have you spoken to the teacher, to the coach, to the individual in the district that where you feel like we need some resolution or we have a discussion to have. And if the answer is no, let me get you to that person. But then if you have spoken there, have you spoken to the next level and then to the principal? And then have you gone all the way through before it is even appropriate for the board to take the matter under consideration? So they teach us basically how to field this question. We hear you, we understand, and let me get you to the person who can help you. And then it can work its way up that chain of command. But it's a training we all go through. It's very difficult. They teach us, don't do your own investigation. We can't have one board member sniffing around buildings.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's...
Yeah.
I think that's a great point that he just made. The training is great, following the process. But I think a lot of things that happen, too, that frustrate people is we also, there'll be a point or time where legal counsel is involved. And the board and myself both have to follow the direction. And the first thing legal counsel says is, what should your policy read?
How were they trained?
And then have you been trained and do that? So, I mean, the board and myself do a lot of work that try to follow protocols and stuff too. But I also want to bring in, there's a lot of legal responsibilities that the Board of Trustees, I don't think people understand. Laws are laws. And as a public official, they have to follow the rules. So when we say, here are the rules, or the legal counsel gives us advice, these are your policies, these are your procedures, or here's how you handle this, we have a responsibility to follow that protocol. So Travis and the board and myself, those are all parameters from the training from the School Boards Association to legal counsel to policies. It's really it's not even a 30,000-foot view. Sometimes it's a 100,000-foot view that we have to operate at for a little bit until the process has been followed correctly. Is that fair?
Yeah, and to follow up just a little with that, we have an entire section of policy in the manual that deals with board members, their behavior, what's expected of us, and how we're supposed to conduct ourselves when we're at a building, when we're at a public event, when we're cheering on the homecoming team. all of these things are spelled out in policy. So the board's written restrictions on ourselves and what our behavior needs to be, how we act as a group and not as individuals. But that takes a little getting used to as well, that I'm 1/9 of a vote. I don't get to make a decision. I can make 1/9 of a decision. I've got to talk to the rest of the board to my way of thinking, or I'm on the wrong path and they need to change my mind. But that takes a little getting used to.
And then I want to add complete clarity to this whole great interview. Then you got leadership governance.
Yes.
So you got board policy, then you got leadership governance, which are all things that drive what we do as a relationship with the board, with the community, and how we operate as a school district, which is a whole other interview.
It is, and indeed, another interview. And in fact, you know, the board is about to change. The complexion of the board is about to change. It's one of those years where a heavier number of five new board positions come up. There's one candidate who's currently on, been on for a very short amount of time. He was appointed when Randy Brown resigned. The rest, other than Lynette Fox, who's been on the board for a while, are all going to be brand new. So you're on a whole new learning curve. So I hope that we can come back and talk about the board, the responsibility of the board, the role of the board, where it begins and ends at another time.
So can I say, not hope, let's make it happen.
Absolutely, let's do that. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time. Thank you for explaining public comment period and what it is, what it isn't, and how to make your voice heard in an appropriate way that is likely to get the action that you...
This is good stuff. I'm going to use thank you to us. Thank you to you for allowing us to communicate and get this out. So this is good.
Yeah, I would tack onto that too. This is a great chance for us to speak to the public, get them in to talk with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much indeed for your time.
This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.